all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
And welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio. It is Tuesday, March 7th, 2023. Coming up this hour, the shambolic Mr. Gableman. We talked to one of the attorneys with the progressive legal group Law Forward about the ethics complaint the group has filed against former state Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman over his shambolic investigation, as they put it, into the 2020 presidential election. And we'll recap a community meeting in Abbotsford on the topic of driver's licenses and putting road safety ahead of immigration politics. We'll get an update from weatherology meteorologist Michael Cairo. Chad Holmes from Bull Falls Radio will join us in the Civic Media homeroom at the end of the show. And then coming up tomorrow, is QAnon going to play a role in trying to elect Dan Kelly to the Wisconsin Supreme Court? We'll be examining that question. As always, your phone calls are welcome at 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155. And our email address is radio at upnorthnewswi.com. And you can check out the work of the Up North News folks over at upnorthnewswi.com. And we're going to be talking later in the week with Kiev Akil about a story that he just posted to the Up North News website late yesterday. The headline being, "The man who helped overturn Roe v. Wade comes to Wisconsin for the Supreme Court race in an election which will decide abortion rights." And it's all about somebody who was known as Donald Trump's judge whisperer, who ensured that Trump would appoint judges to the court who would overturn Roe v. Wade, even as they said publicly under oath that they thought it was settled law. And now this same person is turning their attention to Wisconsin and is already putting all kinds of money into the race. You can read that article from Kiev Akil over at upnorthnewswi.com. And again, we will talk to Kia in our 6 o'clock hour on Thursday morning. Okay, very busy hour coming up here. First, after our weatherology update from meteorologist Michael Cairo, we're going to be talking to Hans Breitenmoser and Tony Gonzalez. And they attended a meeting in Abbotsford on the subject of driver's licenses and how once upon a time, you got a driver's license by taking a test that proved you knew the rules of the road and could drive safely. But then immigration politics got in the way, and what you have are a lot of folks who are on the roads right now because they have to be for work or for family reasons or whatnot. They're not licensed, which means they may not necessarily be trained. They may not necessarily be safe because they don't want a record to exist. And so there was an interesting community meeting in the Abbotsford area that we want to talk to Tony Gonzalez and Hans Breitenmoser all about that. And so looking forward to that coming up in our very next segment. All right, Hollywood is gearing up. The 95th Academy Awards will be taking place on Sunday. Everything, Everywhere, All at Once is coming in as the lead nominee. The film industry is hoping to move past the Chris Rock or the Will Smith slap of Chris Rock at last year's ceremonies. The ceremony will begin at 7 o'clock. It'll be on ABC. And of course, there will be the red carpet shows that come before that. Jimmy Kimmel will be the host for the third time, the first time since 2018. That was also the last time that the show had a solo host. The show went hostless for several years. Last year, it was Regina Hall, Amy Schumer, and Wanda Sykes hosted kind of as a trio. But yes, here we have a solo host this time. The 10 movies competing for Best Picture, All Quiet on the Western Front, Avatar, The Way of Water, The Banshees of Inisherin, Elvis, Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Fablemans, Tar, Top Gun Maverick, Triangle of Sadness, and Women Talking. There will be obviously an A-list of presenters from Hollywood who are helping hand out the Oscars. And I mentioned the red carpet, of course, where it's usually on E, but I think there's other channels as well that do that. And I will admit, Aaron, that I watch the red carpet shows not because I'm familiar with fashion. or anything like that. But, you know, it's a conversation piece. When I've seen people who really know fashion engage in social media posts and they sound very educated about fashion. And then there's people like me that go, that bow is too big.
Yeah, I'm more in the latter camp as well.
And the thing is, you don't have to do it. You don't have to watch, you know, the red carpet shows and engage in public mockery. That's just a habit that I happen to have.
Sometimes those kind of things can be pretty fun.
Well, and there is, of course, a self-serving reason for it as well, that every so often you see an actor come through and he's got on a tux that looks good and you want to take a note of it. Not that you're necessarily going to pay as much for that tux, but it's always nice to see a really well-cut suit. Not that I wear them anymore. I haven't since my TV anchoring days, but I'm all the time on the outlook for something like that. But even once I see, you know, a really nice suit, a really nice tux or something, then I'm reminded I also don't look like that person. I don't look like Brad Pitt. So right. It wouldn't look the same on me, shall we say.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, where sometimes I've thought, you know, I should try and find a nice suit. And at some point, I probably should, but It's not going to look the same.
No, it doesn't lay the same on this frame, shall we say. But, you know, that also is why the red carpet show sometimes provides, good incentive to maybe go do a few crunches now and then. And I do for about, you know, 3-4 days, and then the feeling wears off. All right, we'll take a quick pause here. We'll get a weatherology update, and because apparently we're going to get some more measurable snowfall on the way before the end of the week in some parts of the state. So we'll get that, and we'll talk about driver's licenses and politics coming up next. You're up north. All right, we will talk about driver's licenses in Wisconsin and what the rules are and perhaps what the rules should be. But before we get to that, we're going to talk to, I believe it's meteorologist Michael Cairo over at Weatherology with an update for us. Michael?
It is indeed. Good morning.
Hey, good. Good to talk to you. I understand that we may be looking at the chance for some snow again before the end of the week here. And again, that reminder that March gets us all the full range of weather. I was looking at one TV report that lists, you know, the almanac, the record high, the record low. Mm-hmm. And yesterday, I think the record high for that date was like 76 and the record low was minus 17. I mean, I don't know which date has the widest range out there, but March gets kind of ridiculous that way. We never know what to expect and why we so much appreciate your expertise. What can you tell us about this week on a Tuesday morning?
Yeah, March is one of those months where you see those wild swings in weather that can occur. But at least for this March, so far, at least through the middle part of this month, we're expecting those temperatures to be at or slightly below average temperature-wise. And as you're mentioning, that next round of some accumulating snowfall headed on in for the latter part of your work week, especially coming up a Thursday night and lingering into the day on Friday as an area of low pressure looks to work just off to our south. So enjoy those nice quiet conditions out there for today. Actually, much of the state going to enjoy a good deal of sunshine, especially to start the day. We'll start to see some increasing clouds though working on into western portions of the state, areas like Baldwin, Chippewa Falls, and off to near Richland Center again by this afternoon. High temperatures slightly above average for this time of year. We'll have those highs in the upper 30s for Wausau, but some lower 40s down to near Madison and including La Crosse. And then for tonight, still looking to stay dry statewide, just some cloud cover working on through with overnight lows, not overly cold, lower to middle 20s in northern portions of the state for tonight, but sticking closer to that 30-degree mark for Madison and over to near Richland Center. Into the day on Wednesday, still the bulk of any snow activity largely staying across Minnesota. Our western portions of Wisconsin and areas near that Minnesota state border region could maybe pick up some light snow or light rain-snow mixture by late in the day. High temperatures working up into the middle to upper 30s for Wausau, upper 30s expected for Chippewa Falls, and even some lower to middle 40s for Madison and points off to the southwest from there. Wednesday night, snow still largely confined to far western portions of Wisconsin, still on the lighter side, less than an inch of any snow accumulation there for Wednesday night, and actually even into your Thursday, still light snow snow confined to mainly western portions of the state, but that main push of the plowable snow months expected Thursday night into the day on Friday. An early look at those amounts, Wausau to near Chippewa Falls line, and points off to the north from there, expecting around 3 to 5 inches of snow accumulation. But I think we'll eventually see some winter storm watches across the southern two-thirds of the state, as we are expecting a decent shot at some 6-plus inch snowfall totals, especially from about Wisconsin Rapids and areas down to near Madison, including Richland Center as well. Again, could see those 6-plus inch snowfall totals Thursday night and on into the day on Friday.
There's your weatherology update from meteorologist Michael Carroll. Michael, thank you so much. Have a great day. We'll talk again tomorrow. All right, there's Michael. We appreciate him sharing what we ought to be on the lookout for the chance for some snowfall coming in. Let's take some time now to visit with Hans Breitenmoser, as we do occasionally on Tuesdays. And also Tony Gonzalez joins us, a co-founder of the American Hispanic Association. And we're going to be talking about driver's licenses. Tony, thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me in your program.
You bet.
I haven't had coffee yet.
That's okay. And Hans, I think you are on the line as well, right?
I am.
All right. There you are. Good to hear your voice. And, both of you had told me some time back about a community meeting that was planned for this past Saturday in Abbotsford on the subject of driver's licenses. Tony, do you want to start off by saying what led to the need to have a meeting like this, and built around, how did you frame the topic for this kind of a community meeting?
Well, you bet. And again, thanks for having me in your program. Well, what happened is some years ago, we had started a coalition, included very many different people. Even the Archbishop in Milwaukee was part of this coalition to restore driver's licenses for undocumented people. Of course, here came COVID and everything kind of took a backseat, and we had left that there. And so we restarted just a couple of weeks ago, trying to get this coalition rolling again and informing people of the importance that it was for everybody on the roads to be safe and to have the people next to you that drive, with the assurance that they know how to drive and they got some kind of insurance. So on February 21st, we went down to the Capitol. We opened up we had a press conference, announcing again that the coalition is back to work and all the members that we have so far. And then by coincidence, I had the great fortune of meeting with some of the legislators that we need to make aware of this law. And in particular, a lot of the people on the Republican side, being that they have the majority and everything, they will be actually the people that would be crucial for a vote for this to pass. So I did have the opportunity to meet with Senator Jesse James from the area of Eau Claire and through the 29 corridor right there. And he accepted to come to a visit, and that kind of just set off putting together a meeting in about 10 days. And I was able to get some other representatives to come join us for that meeting. We had Representative Pat Snyder. We had Representative Callahan from Hans' area right there, and Donna Rosar. And so we decided to do a listening session with other of our allies, with the sole purpose of really just helping those legislators help us come to something so we can have this license issue resolved and really solved a lot of problems here in Wisconsin. So last Saturday was the day, and Hans was one of our guests too, kind of putting out there the importance and how it affects families.
Yeah, and Hans, you were explaining, and I'm also reading from Ruth Conniff in the Wisconsin Examiner, that in 18 other states, anyone, regardless of immigration status, can be a licensed driver. Minnesota just passed such a law. But that in Wisconsin, you can't get a driver's license if you don't have a valid Social Security number, which has put thousands of unlicensed and uninsured drivers on the road. And Hans, I'm sure that's been a topic of conversation long before this meeting in Abbotsford.
Oh, for sure, for sure. I mean, the reality in Wisconsin is that, and I'll speak to it from the dairy farming perspective, the dairy industry would collapse tomorrow if we waved a magic wand and all foreign-born residents of Wisconsin magically disappeared. The dairy industry would collapse. Not to say that there aren't dairy farms out in, you know, in Wisconsin who don't have employees and don't have foreign-born employees, but the reality is most people do, most farms do have employees, and a lot of those employees are foreign-born.
Yeah, let me jump in just to say that in Ruth Conniff's article, she quotes Michael Slattery, a Manitowoc County dairy farmer and a board member of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, who said that large and mid-sized dairy farms, which make most of the milk in Wisconsin, employ about 8,000 undocumented people who make up about 70 to 80% of their workforce, Hans, completely underscoring your point that folks need to appreciate what the dairy workforce is really like here and what would happen if we continue to simply play political games with immigration policy.
Well, right. I mean, we know that we can't seem to get consensus and good legislation and good policy at the federal level. And but we suffer at the local level. Now, getting back to the dairy industry, I mean, as dairy farmers, just like every other employer in Wisconsin, we asked people, they're obligated to fill out an I-9. We put that on file. But we can't tell the difference between a good social and a bad social and all that. And that's not our problem, and it shouldn't be. We're there to hire people and create jobs and so forth. But when it comes down to it, you understand that a lot of the folks aren't here, you know, quote, legally. They still have to get to work, especially in rural Wisconsin. And, you know, the story I like to share, Pat, is that my folks are immigrants. They came from Switzerland. And all those years ago, when my mom had to get a driver's license, she went to the DMV. She passed the test. They handed her a license. And, you know, so she was a safe driver all those years and contributed to the economy and so forth. That's really all anybody's asking for, is to make the roads safer and take the burden of immigration off local officials. Our local law enforcement has enough to do. It's enough. It's sort of another unfunded mandate. It puts them in a weird position. It puts our DMV in a position of being the immigration policy, czar, and it doesn't make any sense. The whole thing is just dumb as hell. And you know, it wasn't always this way. Pre-2007, you went to the DMV, you passed the test, and you got a license.
And instead, now with the games that are being played here, it really affects, Tony, the folks in the Hispanic community and in the farming community who, as it stands, are getting up at 4 a.m. and doing the things that very few people want to do in a barn, at that hour. It's why we do rely on the labor force that we have. And so now you add this layer of, not being able to get a driver's license and leading to people who are unlicensed and perhaps untrained. It just puts another layer of stress on a workforce that already is pouring themselves into a big chunk of the Wisconsin economy.
Absolutely. And in particular, right after the pandemic we had, these are the people that were out there still at the fields, still at the farms, and they were just doing their job like any other day, and continued to put the food on America's table. There's one thing. Obviously, there's a concern, and about people being here in an illegal fashion, undocumented. But, that is the result of a broken immigration system that Wisconsin cannot, as a state, do anything about. The best thing that the state can do is, we take care of our backyard, take care of our economy, take care of the needs that we have in this area. As you can see, there's wanted signs everywhere. Employ the people and really put the pressure on the federal government to do what they need to have done for the longest time, which is some kind of fix to this immigration policies that we have that are just archaic. They are not good. People say get on the line, but where is this line? How much does it cost to get to this line? And there's really no line. I mean, when you think of refugees and people seeking asylum in this country, like just recently we have an influx of people from Nicaragua, from Afghanistan, from Ukraine itself. There was no line. They were put ahead. They were put in here because it's the emergency of it. So this is no different. We have thousands of people here in Wisconsin and all over the country that deserve the opportunity. And as far as driving, you know, it's not fair because people, as Hans was saying, you know, you don't know the difference between one idea or the other. They're right. working, they're paying their taxes, they're still getting deducted. So, you know, they should be able to use the roads. And as citizens that do pay and have insurance, our legislators need to ensure that they're protecting us on the road with people that we are sure know how to do the driving.
And that can be done if, in a bipartisan manner, we restore driver's licenses to immigrants. And the indication I'm getting from you and in our conversations is that there is a better chance than ever that it could pass the legislature this year. And that's something where, again, if you get a chance to talk to your hometown legislators, let them know that that should be a priority. Tony Gonzalez and Hans Breitenmoser, thank you so much for giving us some history on this. We appreciate it and wish you all the best with the endeavor.
Thank you very much for having us in your program, and hope to be out here once again, giving a little more lessons on this driver's.
Oh, we definitely will. All right, Tony, thanks so much. We will talk about the Michael Gableman case and an ethics complaint next. You're up north.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com. I learned just who I was
and who I was in that old truck. All right, a quick reminder that tomorrow on the program, we will be talking to folks from A Better Wisconsin Together and what they've uncovered about far-right extremists, including one nationally known figure espousing QAnon theories and who was on the U.S. Capitol grounds during the January 6th insurrection, who's now wanting to play a substantial role on behalf of conservative former Justice Dan Kelly in that Supreme Court race. So we'll have an update on that tomorrow. We use the term former Supreme Court justice in a couple of different ways here in part, so we want to make sure there's no confusion here. We've talked about Michael Kelly, or Dan Kelly rather, who's looking to get back on the Supreme Court. But in this segment, we're going to talk about former Justice Michael Gableman, another conservative, somebody who was on the Supreme Court, but has been more known lately for coming back out of, you know, public retirement, if you will, at the behest of Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, in order to, quote unquote, investigate the 2020 election. It did not go well from the very start. And the former justice didn't need any help from anybody else getting there. It was just in the way that he conducted the investigation, the way he began it. I mean, it started at the Republican State Convention. That's where it was announced, where he was introduced at a Republican convention. So it hardly had the appearance of something that was going to be even-handed from the get-go. And then he made several mistakes in the beginning that had me comparing him to Inspector Clouseau from the old Pink Panther movies. And the bumbling continued, but then it crossed into the way that he was handling or not properly handling public records that led to lawsuits. The lawsuits are now costing taxpayers more than, you know, now it's a multi-million dollar price tag between the investigations and the lawsuits. It's gotten to the point where an ethics complaint has been filed against him by two attorneys from the progressive legal group Law Forward. Dan Lenz is among them, and he joins us now to talk about, as it was described in the ethics complaint, the shambolic former Justice Gableman. Yeah, I had to look it up, and I'd been using ham-handed, bungling, everything else, and I learned a much better word, thanks to Dan. So, Dan, thanks for being here. We appreciate your appearance.
Well, thanks, Pat. So happy to be here. I'm so happy to be with you.
Well, okay, so you've got this complaint that accuses Gableman of several things, you know, lacking competency to undertake the assignment, a lack of honesty, harassing his targets, failing to abide by rules, violating basic rules of legal practice. The overview of all this is what? That he was he just simply unqualified, that the title of former Supreme Court justice isn't enough to do something as important as investigate a presidential election?
Well, we think that Mr. Gableman specifically was not qualified for this job, and for a couple reasons. One is something that he told everybody, he admitted in public, which is he knew nothing about elections when he started. Now, attorneys take jobs sometimes when we don't know the substance matter of what we're going to be talking about very well. Then we research it. We find out more. We talk to people who know something about elections, about cheese manufacturing, about whatever it is you're going to have a case about. But Mr. Gableman didn't do that. He instead, he talked to conspiracy theorists. He hired out-of-state lawyers. He, started following up on subpoenas that were really, he knew nothing about the substance of what he was talking about. And that's really what we saw at the end of the day, you know, that he never fixed that. Instead, at the conclusion of his investigation, or at least before he got fired, he was still espousing theories about elections that had no basis in reality, had no basis in law. And that fell below the basic standard for attorneys. And that's what our complaint is about.
And look, attorneys not only have to be educated on a matter and have to do the research and be able to make a point in a court of law, but there's something about the presentation of an argument as well. But unfortunately for Wisconsin taxpayers, that seemed to be the only thing that former Justice Gableman had, was presentation. In his mind, if you start with bluster and essentially in a very Trumpian way try to Bigfoot people, they will somehow bend to your will. And so some of his initial bluster was threatening to jail people, like the mayor of Madison, the mayor of Green Bay, Eric Genrich, things like that. And you've noted that Law Forward has represented, folks like the Green Bay mayor. So if you could talk to us a bit about, that part of it, the whole taking actions to harass or maliciously injure your targets, and how it's one thing to make a claim about somebody, but when you get to threats without any evidence, that certainly seems to have crossed a line in my book.
And ours too. And that's why it's in the complaint. Something I should clarify from the top is that while we did represent the city of Green Bay and Mayor Genrich and other entities that were targeted by Mr. Gableman, this was not written on behalf of a client. We're not representing a client in this matter. We wrote this complaint based on our independent ethical obligations as attorneys to report wrongdoing to the state.
Good note. Thank you for that.
No, I appreciate the opportunity to say it. So that being said, something that we learned in our representation is how Mr. Gableman treated those he determined were against him. And again, he was supposed to be conducting an independent investigation on behalf of the state. There shouldn't have been anyone against him, but he decided that there was. And for those people, he went out of his way to report dishonestly about them, about how they had interacted with his investigation, about what they had done in the 2020 election, and about how they should be treated. And the most egregious one is the one you identified, which was his attempt to jail the mayors of Green Bay and Madison. And that actually expanded in February of 2020 to a whole other group of people, employees of the city of Milwaukee, employees of the Elections Commission, the chair of the Elections Commission. He didn't just leave it with the mayors. But the bigger problem there is what had actually happened. And we lay this out in our complaint, which is those cities, those entities, to the person, had turned over documents, had turned over tens of thousands of pages of documents to Mr. Gableman at that point, based on conversations that we were having with his office, where they were saying things like, if you turn over these documents, it's fine. We don't need more public testimony. I'm sorry, private testimony. But then he turned around and, I think to everyone's surprise, started this lawsuit in Waukesha County that we had to go through.
And it raises this one point that I want to add as well, that you started with that response. And that is that nobody should have been against Gableman conducting a thorough and by the book review. Because, and I cannot say this enough, if there were evidence, if there were actual tangible evidence of irregularities in 2020, it would have been Democrats and Republicans, progressives, conservatives, and independents would have all said, let's look into this. We can't have something like this undermining our election integrity. The problem, my words, not yours, Dan, is that there was no factual basis. There were allegations, there were conspiracies. And again, if Gableman had gone in and started to provide at least some evidence, if not some proof of these things, that would have been one thing. But instead, you had the way that he was handling it, the way that he was threatening people, and it's led to complaints. And yours is the third complaint. Reading from a WisPolitik story here, There was a Milwaukee man who sent a letter last summer asking that Gableman's law license be suspended over his conduct. But then there was the Dane County judge who sent a referral to the Office of Lawyer Regulation over Gableman's conduct during a lawsuit that were seeking records from his investigation. So that gets me into a two-part thing here, Dan. One is his conduct in things like these lawsuits, and the other is about his handling of you know, records itself. But since we've talked about conduct previously, let's stick with that for a moment. We've seen him in court. We saw him essentially back-talking a judge, you know, during one of these lawsuits, to the point where the judge initially, you know, eventually filed a complaint against him. I can't imagine that there's anything you're taught that says talk back to the judge as a way to get out of being accused of mishandling public records.
To the contrary, we are taught as attorneys that sort of win or lose, that you have to show respect to the tribunal, that you have to show respect to the system, that we are officers of the court at the end of the day, and that means something. It means that while judges will frequently give you decisions you don't like or do things you don't like, that you are an officer of that court and you have to accord yourself. What Mr. Gableman was actually referred to LR by Judge Remington for, and this is not part of our complaint because we were not part of this litigation. This was handled by an organization called American Oversight and their attorneys, who did amazing work this entire period, really getting to the bottom of what exactly was going on with Mr. Gableman and his staff and his office, and uncovering a lot of the records that, while we rely on those, I should make clear, they deserve a ton of credit here. But what Mr. Gableman was referred to for discipline was not even his conduct toward Judge Remington on the stand, which is pretty egregious, but were for comments he made into a hot mic while he was sitting at counsel table, you know, where the attorneys sit, about Judge Remington and about opposing counsel that were really beyond the pale and disturbing.
Yeah, they were. I neglected to mention the hot mic moment where he spoke disparagingly of a woman who was representing the other side of that particular case. To get to the other half of that question, and that is his handling of public records. Now, again, that's not laid out here specifically in the 5 points that you accuse Gableman of, although it certainly seems to be woven in there when you talk about lacking the competency to undertake this kind of assignment, failure to abide by rules, violating basic rules of legal practice. It isn't just a matter of what you say and what arguments you present, but frankly, how you handle the paperwork, how you handle the materials that I would think in your mind is, again, something former Justice Gableman did so poorly that it warrants this ethics complaint.
Right. And something that we do talk about in our complaint, and I do think is closely related, is what it means to work on behalf of the state. Mr. Gableman was a contractor for the state. He was not an official. He's not a constitutional officer. He sometimes acted as though he was. He used certain iconography and the bench of the Supreme Court in ways that we think were inappropriate, to sort of assume the mantle or pretend that he had more power than he did. But leaving that all aside, just as someone who's working on behalf of the state, he had certain obligations to transparency, to acting in the state's best interest, acting in the best interest of his client. And we think he didn't meet any of those obligations. Instead, he continually tried to hide who he was, tried to hide who was working with him, tried to hide what he was doing. And organizations like American Oversight and sometimes our clients had to really push and pull in ways that shouldn't be needed for an officer of this, or excuse me, for someone working on behalf of the state. But Mr. Gableman decided that he was an exception to those rules.
Yeah, you raise another good point, is that the secrecy that was involved here. He wanted people to testify basically behind closed doors at an office that he had in a strip mall in Brookfield or something, as I seem to recall, when he could have just as easily worked with the legislature, which hired him, and had, you know, the Assembly Elections Committee, you know, ask somebody to come in and testify, and Gableman could have participated there. There were plenty of avenues in which he could have behaved other than the way in which he did. So it led to this complaint, and it leads to us starting to wrap things up here by saying, okay, you filed this complaint. Does it ask for anything in particular? What is it that the Office of Lawyer Regulation or others can do?
So the Office of Lawyer Regulation has general disciplinary authority over lawyers in the state. They can recommend any number of remedial measures. We didn't ask for anything specific in this complaint. We think that's up to the Office of Lawyer Regulation to determine. We think that there are a lot of things here that they should look into. We asked them to conduct a thorough investigation and make their own findings. But ultimately, that will be up to them. Mr. Gableman has the opportunity then to ask the Supreme Court to review it if he feels like that was warranted.
Is there a timeline for things like this to happen?
There's not a specific timeline. We're asking the office to move quickly, but we understand that, again, there's quite a bit here.
Mm-hmm. There is, but we really appreciate your willingness to work on it with Law Forward, one of several subjects that the group works on, and I look forward to visiting with you and your colleagues again on some of the other matters that you're undertaking to try to provide some transparency and accountability to what's happening as people, you know, quote unquote, investigate our elections here in Wisconsin. Dan, thank you so much for the time. I greatly appreciate it.
Thanks, Pat. Great to be with you.
All right. When we come back, we'll wrap things up for a Tuesday, and we'll do the Civic Media Homeroom. We'll go up to Bull Falls Radio in Wausau, and we'll talk to Chad Holmes coming up in just a bit. You're up north.
That old trick.
All right, just a reminder, a question of the week is what movie wins your award for Best Picture of 2022? Remember, that could include things you saw in the theater or just on the streaming services or cable or broadcast. If you head over to Up North News and look for the video feed of this year's radio show, you can put a comment in there. And Chad Holmes joins us now from Bull Falls Radio. And Chad, I looked at several lists of movies, and I saw Elvis, and I saw Glass Onion, and that's the list. There's all these others. I'm like, I might go see these. I'm never going to go see these. And by the way, Cocaine Bear doesn't count. It's a 2023 movie. So those of you smart Alex out there, you have to wait till next year's Academy Award to see if Cocaine Bear gets it for that.
When you started talking about that, I'm thinking, please don't ask me what my choice would be. I haven't had time to see anything recently.
I look at your feet. I know you don't have time to tie your shoes, for goodness sake.
I'll promise to get to a movie in the next few weeks after work reports. So then I will start to do my research at that point.
Well, I was trying to find some examples of ones that weren't in the theater, but were on streaming services first, Netflix or Prime Video. And I saw here's Lucy and Desi, another one that I wanted to see over the past year, but never got to. So I think this will be my chance Oscar weekend to maybe look up one or two of these just to see if they win awards. But getting back to your La Vida Loca over there, you still have high school sports going on like crazy, moving into the postseason. What's that been like?
Busy. And actually this week is actually like the slowest week I've had since November because don't have any games till Thursday with the sectionals for the boys. So actually a little bit of a slower start to the week, a much needed respite, I will say that.
Yeah, you can definitely take that. Now, for folks who are in the Wausau area and listening on Bull Falls Radio, you should know that while we only got to spend about 10 minutes with Tony Gonzalez and Hans Breitenmoser on the subject of driver's licenses and trying to put road safety ahead of immigration politics, if you need more of that, and I think you should listen to it, I would refer you to the Chad Holmes show from 2 to 4 p.m., specifically the 3 o'clock hour today.
Yeah, Tony's going to join me, and we're going to spend probably a couple segments talking, because I know he's very excited about talking about what he found out, talking to some elected officials over the weekend. He gave me a ring, actually, during the middle of my show yesterday. He was like, I got to come and talk about it. So I said, hey, come on in, Tony. So we'll talk a lot about it. And it's obviously a very important issue, and it's great that Tony's involved in it. Also, nice to hear that Pat Snyder made a public appearance, so I'm curious to hear about that.
Not only that, but
haven't heard much from Pat recently.
Yeah, and a couple of other folks. And one I wanted to clarify, because I'm sure people heard Tony Gonzalez mention that Jesse James was there. And I should explain for folks outside of the Chippewa Valley, mostly, Jesse James, the state senator, is the former police chief in Altoona. And he then ran for state assembly, I think something like two terms, and now is in the state Senate seat that I'd actually held a very long time ago. Now it feels like, but it stretches basically along the Highway 29 corridor and therefore includes a lot of the area that is impacted by dairy farms and other industries where immigrants play a very big role. And so you want those folks to be safe. And if Senator Jesse James and if some of the other legislators who were there can use that meeting as an opportunity to maybe back off of the subject of who gets a driver's license and instead focus on are people who are driving safely licensed, I think that would probably better serve the area. My view, anyway.
Well, absolutely, but boy. I got to see some actions from some of these folks because the rhetoric over the number of years has been wrong. I guess that's the way to put it. There are ways to solve problems, but just too often right now we're seeing too much rhetoric in terms of just trying to light fires under people emotionally instead of intellectually trying to figure out what's the best thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, we do need people to stop playing games because, again, there's plenty of people that will do it on right-wing radio and TV. And in fact, one of my regular listeners sent this email, which says simply, "No driver's licenses for illegals ever." Well, and the fact that that's still a word that you're using, that they're illegals, that you would diminish their humanity. I mean, it says so much more about the person that is using that word than anything you might want to try to, besmirch that person with who's busting their hump and I think working a lot harder than this person and so many others. These are people that deserve some humanity.
An issue put into a bumper sticker.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. So tell me more about the show and, guests you've had on or guests you're going to be having on. Well,
Thursday started, we're going to start bringing in some of the folks who are running for the Wausau School Board. And obviously, it's a very interesting time to have a Wausau School Board election. There's five folks who are running, will be on the ballot coming up.
For how many seats?
For two seats.
Five people for two seats. Okay.
And we'll start with Fred Teeley, one of the candidates, on Thursday. We'll try to bring them all in. There'll be invitations to all, and we're going to try to make sure we get all of them, hopefully. But we'll start with Fred coming up on Thursday, and obviously some interesting issues to talk about during this very interesting time for the Wausau School District.
Yeah, you used interesting twice there, and it just reminds me of the old curse. May you live in interesting times, and the Wausau School District is living up to that right now.
Exactly. So it's be curious to because there's more than one issue too. I mean, that's the thing as well. We have obviously a headline issue with the consolidation plan, but I'm very interested to find out generally about how these folks feel about public education. About of course, there's always going to be the voucher issue that is discussed. What do they think about what the plans are in Madison? What would they like to see with the budget? And so there's obviously different issues to talk about beyond even the consolidation issue.
Sure. I found this very interesting. There is an ad tracker that looks at political ads and purchases and everything. And it notes here, the Dan Kelly campaign has still not placed directly any TV or radio ad spending, which is not the same as the outside groups. There are outside groups that are in. But I found it interesting that the Dan Kelly campaign has not directly placed TV or radio ad spending. And some folks have been saying, well, that's a reflection on the weakness of the campaign. And I don't think so. I think that is recognizing how dependent campaigns have become on third parties because they can raise basically unlimited funds to do it. It's kind of a sad commentary on this race.
It certainly is. And I do think there is an element of weakness there, too. I think the conservatives got themselves into a bit of a pickle. They got themselves a candidate who has proven not to be very popular the first time he was on the ballot. They went for the purity, and now they go, well, what are we going to do now? Because he's just going to ride the third party to try to, to get in there. And I think that's going to be very difficult because we've seen Janet Protasiewicz really be aggressive early on since winning that primary.
Yeah, you can't get it done on your base alone. Chad Holmes on Bull Falls Radio, 2 to 4 p.m. Thank you, sir. Good to talk to you.
Absolutely.
Have a wonderful day. And everybody out there, enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. And we'll see you back here come Wednesday morning.